my lords and ladies. Welcome back to Of Swords and Magic. My name is LJ, and I welcome you back. If you joined us before for previous episodes, thank you for coming back to our seasonal podcast. I've decided to call it seasonal, as I have only posted 2 episodes now within a year. Yay! So welcome back, and thank you for joining us. If you're new to this podcast, this is a podcast discussing Arthurian literature and legend and everything in between. So if you are fairly new to Arthurian legend and don't know that much about it, that's totally fine. This is a podcast slightly more geared towards people who are not as familiar with it. If you are and you're a total complete pro, then maybe this is something to listen to on a car ride or while washing dishes, or if you just need your fix of Arthuriana for the day. So, no matter who you are, welcome. And thanks for joining us. I sincerely apologize for how long it took to do another episode. I've been very busy working constantly, but now it seems that things are lightening up just a little bit, so I should be able to do more episodes. I fully intend to. So today we are going to continue, and I thought for the next couple episodes we could discuss Chrétien de Troyes and his work. Chrétien de Troyes, for those who don't know, is a French poet. He wrote mostly in the 12th century, the late 12th century, so I'd say around 1170s, 1180s. He was a writer in the court of Marie de Champagne, who is the daughter of Eleanor of Aquitaine, and he wrote mostly romances, and he was actually the foundation on which most Arthurian literature that we know today was based, because the first time we've ever heard King Arthur's name mentioned in a story was by Geoffrey of Monmouth, who wrote about Arthur and Merlin and their destiny. The next after that was Chrétien de Troyes, and he wrote 5 Arthurian romances, one about Sir Lancelot, about Sir Percival, about Sir Yvain, about Sir Eric, and about Cligé, or Cliges. And you'll find out who that is later. You probably don't know who that is because no one ever talks about them. About him and Sir Eric. So anyway, we're going to discuss them for the next couple episodes and their significance in Arthurian literature. Because when we think of Arthurian literature now, guys, we usually think of, you know, T.S. Eliot or T.H. White, right? Or even Marion Zimmer Bradley, who wrote The Mists of Avalon, or Howard Pyle. But none of us think of Chrétien de Troyes, and he is the reason that we have all the stories that we do today. So we're going to discuss him a little bit and his work, and I think for this episode we're just going to talk about his tale of Sir Lancelot, because, you know, Lancelot is one of the most famous knights of King Arthur's court. So we'll discuss Lancelot for this episode, and I'll just kind of give a sort of a storytelling of it, because, well, for those who aren't familiar with the story, you'll get a better knowledge of it, and for those who are familiar, let's be real, we tend to forget Chrétien's work, and we think about the Tower when we think of Sir Lancelot, but we also think of the Grail, and we think of his very scandalous affair with Guinevere, but none of us think of the very first tale of all that he did, including riding in the cart for Guinevere. So we're going to discuss that today, and I'll just sort of give a brief storytelling of it, and then the next episode will probably be about Sir Yvain, and that'll probably take another episode as well, and the next one can be about Eric and Cligé and Percival. So then we can sort of discuss all of them together and discuss themes and archetypes of these characters and how they keep reappearing and reoccurrences of new themes and new characters and major plot points that have inspired later writers, modern Arthurian writers, to write the stories that we know today. Cool? Alright, also, before we get started, just to sort of discuss some Arthuriana going on in the world right now. If you haven't already seen the trailer, there's a new movie coming out called The Kid Who Would Be King. It looks really cute. It's about, I guess, it's like this 11-year-old boy who discovers Excalibur, and Merlin disguises himself as a young teenage boy that's supposed to go to this kid's school, and so he kind of mentors this kid in how to fight this oncoming darkness, probably caused by Morgaine or Morgana or whatever. So this kid, this little kid, has to band up with the kids in his school, and, you know, they kind of become the Knights of the Round Table, I guess, and they become this force of light to defeat this force of evil that's coming. So it's a kind of a modern Arthurian movie, I suppose. Looks really cute. If you've seen it already, I don't know if it's out yet, but if you've seen it already, let me know how it is, and I'll definitely have to check it out. Also, while we're on the subject of literature, there is a series, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, some of you might have, some of you might not have, but there is a series called The Squire's Tales, written by Gerald Morris, the wonderful. It is a fantastic series. I think it's a series of 10 books. I'm still reading it, I'm not done with it yet, but I'm almost done. Guys, it's so good. It's a series of all the Knights of the Round Table and their stories, but all of the stories, and each one is about a different Knight of the Round Table, all of them are told from each knight's squire, from the squire's point of view. It's amazing. And the main character throughout the series, really, is Sir Gawain and his squire, Terence, who has magic, and I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but he's a lot more than he seems. It's phenomenal. It's so fun. The series is so fun. If you want something lighthearted and fun to read, you will not be able to stop reading it. I've read an entire one of his books in one day. It's so easy to do. They're so good, and they put a smile on your face. So anyway, if you are not as familiar with the legend, maybe read some of the older texts first, if you want to find somewhere to start. But that is a fun, more modern adaptation that I would definitely suggest. So anyway, enjoy. Check it out if you haven't already. It's a phenomenal series. Okay, now that that's all out of the way, and while we're on the subject of literature, let us begin our podcast on one of the foundations of all Arthurian literature, the work of Chrétien de Troyes. So a little bit quickly about Chrétien. You already know that he was a poet from the 12th century. He's French. His idea of courtly love is what most inspired his work, and I can only imagine that he was inspired by his surroundings, because courtly love is a very French thing. It's very highly esteemed, or it seemed to have been very highly esteemed in the French court of the 12th century. His work is very overdramatic, which makes it 10 times more fun to read. It's a little all over the place, but we're gonna comb through it and figure stuff out together in these coming episodes. His work is not so much about King Arthur, really, at all. Arthur's just kind of thrown in there, actually, as a random side character, because it seems that Arthur and Arthurian stories were already being talked about all over the place. Everywhere. Like, everyone knew these stories already. They all knew about King Arthur and about Merlin and about all of these people, about Sir Gawain. He kind of throws Arthur in there as if everybody already knew who he was, and that the people who his audience didn't know about are his knights. So because there weren't a lot of manuscripts back then in the 12th century, there weren't a lot of scriptures, there weren't a lot of stories written on paper. Most tales were told by word of mouth. So Chrétien decided to write them down and tell the tales of the famous King Arthur's knights. Even Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, that story hadn't even been written yet. That was written in the 14th century. We're talking about the 12th century. And still, Sir Gawain is already super famous, and Chrétien calls him Arthur's greatest knight already. Like, everyone knows who he is. Another character who's literally just thrown into these five stories as a side character, because why would we want to talk about him? Everyone already knows everything about him. In fact, Chrétien refers to Gawain, every time Gawain is mentioned in the story, Chrétien refers to him as my lord Gawain, as if he, like, served Sir Gawain. I don't know. It's very interesting. Anyway, my point is, That's who this guy Chrétien was, and that's why all of his tales are about the other characters, the Knights of the Round Table. So, lords and ladies, without further ado, let us begin our tale of the Knight of the Cart. The story of the Knight in the Cart begins on Ascension Day, which is basically a holiday feast after Easter. Almost every story in Arthurian legend begins with a holiday feast. I think that's so funny. Anyway, it's a lovely springtime post-Easter holiday feast. They're all having a great time. Everyone's enjoying themselves, and a knight in full armor bursts into the room, entering the hall, scaring the crap out of everyone and probably causing someone to choke on their food. He comes in and says, "King Arthur, I just want to let you know that I have your lords and ladies, several of them, in captive, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's all. Just wanted to let you know." By the way, I'm going to paraphrase a lot here during this episode, because I'm not going to repeat everything that this guy says, because it's ridiculous. So, anyway, just a heads up. So this guy comes in and says that he has a bunch of Arthur's lords and ladies in captive, and he says, "Arthur, you will probably die first before you can save them. There's nothing you can do about it. I wish it weren't so, but that's the way it is." Arthur doesn't say anything in return. He basically accepts this, or, you know, so we think. He's probably just saying nothing so that the guy will leave and think he's distraught by it, and then Arthur will probably come up with some sort of plan as soon as the guy leaves. But he doesn't get a chance to, because the guy comes back into the room and says, "Hey, if there is one knight that you trust enough to accompany the queen into the woods where I'm keeping all of your knights and ladies captive, then I can send my prisoners to you, and you can pick this one knight to fight against me. And if your knight wins, then I'll release them all, and your queen can accompany them all back to your court. Do we have a deal?" And Arthur goes, "Okay." And so the deal is done. I'm just gonna say this right here and now. This deal, I don't know why Clutchin put this deal into the story in the very beginning, because it actually ends up leading nowhere and has nothing to do with the whole rest of the story. But anyway, that's the way the story starts. So there's a deal. Everyone's talking about it. The feast is kind of ruined. Everyone's talking about who's gonna be the knight that's gonna go and free all of Arthur's knights and ladies. Sir Kay, those of you who have listened to previous episodes, you guys remember Sir Kay? He's the older brother that was raised with Arthur, his stepbrother, really, because they're not related by blood, but his brother that is basically the jerk older brother that no one really likes, and he's very overdramatic and rude and pompous. That guy. So Kay's overdramatic ass comes over, and he claims to leave court and says, "There's nothing you can do about it. I'm gonna leave court. I just wanna let everybody know." And he storms out of the room. And Guinevere goes, "Oh, God." And she goes over to him and says, "Kay, what do you want?" And he says, "I wanna talk to Arthur. I shouldn't even say that I wanna talk to him, because there's no point. I'm going to leave court anyway, because I'm so upset right now." And she goes, "Okay, well, look, I'll take you to talk to Arthur, and I promise you that whatever you want, he will grant you." And he goes, "Okay." So Guinevere takes him to Arthur. Arthur says, "Bro, what's up?" Kay says, "I want to escort the queen. I want to be the knight who escorts the queen out and frees all the prisoners." And Arthur goes, "Wow, you had to do all of that just to ask that? That's ridiculous. But okay, fine, that's fine." Gawain is sitting there, who everyone wishes would have been the knight, because everybody at that point already knew that Sir Gawain was the best knight in King Arthur's court, and he should have been the one to escort the lady. It's a whole bunch of this, like, drama that's totally unnecessary, so we're gonna skip past some of this. Anyway, there's drama between Kay and Gawain, and whatever, it doesn't matter. So Kay sets out on his quest. Gawain eventually decides to go after him, just in case something happens, to make sure that everything's cool. And sure enough, Gawain comes upon Kay's horse, which is riderless and covered with blood, and the rear part of the saddle is broken. So Gawain has every reason to be concerned. He is about to continue his quest and try to find Kay and Guinevere and see what on earth just happened and where they could have gone and what happened to them, when a desperate knight suddenly rides up to Gawain and says, "Excuse me, I really need a horse. My horse is practically dead, and I need something to ride." Gawain says, "Here, take my horse. he has two horses, by the way. One of them carrying his sack of stuff, supplies, etc. And the other one carrying himself. And he says, okay, you can choose either one of my horses. And the Desperate Knight picks the least strong horse, the one that's been ridden all day by Gawain. And Gawain's like, okay, just make sure you ride him gently, because he's been ridden around all day, so he's tired. The knight takes the horse and runs him forward, and Gawain sees how hard the guy is riding his horse, so he spurs his own horse after him and says, wait, wait, you can't ride him like that, slow down. Runs after the guy and finds his horse lying on the ground in the middle of a recently used battlefield, dead, surrounded by all these dead bodies and bloody shields. And then, from the other side of the battlefield, Gawain sees the guy who had just taken his horse and killed it. So, Gawain starts to make his way across the battlefield to give this guy a piece of his mind about courtesy. Meanwhile, it skips over across the battlefield to that guy, zoom in on the guy. The guy is dressed in armor. He's completely covered head to toe in armor, so we don't know what his face looks like or anything. He's talking to a dwarf who is driving a giant cart. Now we're going to take a second to describe carts in medieval England. Carts were used for criminals only. So this isn't like a wheelbarrow cart that you carry vegetables around in through the village. This is a cart, like one of those giant ones that could fit like 10 people. The carts were used to carry people around through the streets to shame criminals. So if you did anything that would be a criminal offense of any kind, whether it be stealing bread from somebody or even a knight who had been defeated in battle, you were then placed in the cart and ridden around the street, and this was worse than death. No one wanted this because you were socially ruined after riding in a cart. Everybody, as you rode through the streets, imagine standing in a cart and riding through the streets, and everyone is shaming you. Everyone's spitting at you, they're tossing tomatoes at you, they're cursing you, they're wishing death upon you. It's awful. And after you're done riding around all day in this cart, not only did you just go through all of that, but you were also banned from any court. No one will invite you to court ever again. No one will speak your name ever again. You might as well be dead. There's no point. So the last thing anyone ever wanted to do was ride in one of those carts. Okay, so just a little side note about carts. So this knight, this desperate knight that's acting a little ridiculous, comes upon this dwarf who's driving this criminal cart, and only dwarves rode carts back then, which is ridiculous. I don't know why it couldn't have been a regular person. I guess little people back then were only fit to drive criminal carts, but that's fine. I'm a little person myself, so I'm slightly offended by this, but that's fine. Moving on. So this guy comes up to the dwarf and says, excuse me, I'm looking for the queen. Do you know where the queen is? The dwarf says, what queen are you talking about? The knight says, the queen. What do you mean, what queen? The queen. I'm looking for the queen. Have you seen her? And the dwarf goes, I don't know what you're talking about, buddy. I've had a long day. If you're looking for whoever you're looking for, get in my cart, and then you'll find her soon enough. Haha. He doesn't care. The knight says, well, it's faster than traveling on foot, and I need to find this lady, so let's go. He gets into the cart. And right before he gets into the cart, this is very important, he halts for 2 seconds. He hesitates for 2 seconds. He's like, wait, if I get into this cart, my social life will be ruined. I will never be invited anywhere ever again. My life will be hell. But it's okay. I love the queen more than anything can ever describe. So I'm getting in the cart. And he gets in the cart. Boom. Then everything begins. So he gets in the cart. The dwarf is like, whoa, bro, I didn't expect you to actually get in the cart, but okay, I guess you're gonna come with me. We're not going anywhere in particular. We're probably going to my house. The knight goes, okay, that's fine, whatever. I just need to find the queen. So if this will get me wherever she is faster, that's fine. Gawain finally catches up. He's a little out of breath. He just got done running across the battlefield. He finally reaches the knight and says, sir, I let you take my horse, fine, but then you continued running it even after you saw that it was already tired, and now you've killed my horse. That's not the way a rider should ever," and the knight interrupts him and says, "Sir, I've no time for this. I'm trying to find the queen." And Gawain says, "I'm trying to find the queen. Who are you?" And the knight says, "I will not tell you who I am. I will never reveal my identity." Like I said, Creechan is very overdramatic. The dwarf explains that he's taking this guy to find the queen, and he's riding in his cart. And Gawain says, "Well, I'm trying to find the queen too, so I'm gonna follow you. I'm not gonna get in the cart, because I'd like to not have my entire life ruined, but I will follow behind you on my horse." So that's what they do. Gawain follows the knight, who is riding in the cart, and as the knight is riding in the cart, of course, he goes through what's expected. He is shamed and ruined and patronized and just tortured by everyone around him who sees him. They spit on him, they curse him, they damn him to hell, they say all these terrible things to him, and the knight does not care. By this time, he has his helmet off even. Like, why would you take your helmet off? Keep it on so no one will see. I don't understand. Anyway, he took his helmet off, maybe to get some fresh air. It's hard to breathe under those helmets, you know. So he has his helmet off, and everyone can see his face, so now everyone will recognize him for the rest of his life as the guy who rode in the cart. The knight who rode in the cart. Anyway, they finally get to the dwarf's lodgings. The dwarf goes, "All right, here's my house. Everybody get out." They get out. The dwarf hesitantly invites them into his lodgings to stay for the night. He lives in a tower keep. It's very nice. They go into the tower, and a beautiful girl and her two maidens greet them and give them a very polite conversation. They exchange a very polite conversation about, you know, small talk, etc. They have dinner. Everyone dresses finely. The girls dress Gawain and this knight in a new mantle, and they give them new clothes to wear that are very fine, and they have a very nice dinner, blah, blah, blah. The maiden, after dinner, the main maiden who came to meet them, leads them to their bedchamber. And there are two beds that are lying, I guess, side by side. I don't know. Two beds lying near each other. They're not the greatest beds, but they're okay. They'll do. They're totally fine. It's better than sleeping on straw. Then there's this other bed that's really, really nice. And it's really big and really comfy looking, and it's made with silk. It's very, very nice. And the lady says to both Gawain and this knight, she says, "Okay, here we go. You guys can sleep on these nice beds, but you must not sleep in the big bed." And the other two guys are like, "Okay, geez, why?" And she says, "Because it's only meant for one person who's going to bring great joy to everyone and blah, blah, blah. And it's only destined for this one person, and only one person can handle sleeping in such a great bed destined for whoever great holiness is going to lie there." And Gawain goes, "Wow, alright, well, I don't really care where I sleep, I'm just gonna go to bed." The other knight goes, "Well, I'll sleep in that bed. I've had a rough day. I've been ridden around in a cart all day being shamed by everybody. There's a really nice bed in front of me, and I'm not going to be told by some woman that I have to sleep on this bed when I can sleep on that really nice one. So excuse me, I'm going to sleep in that one, thanks." And she says, "I wouldn't do that if I were you." And he goes, "Yeah, all right, I'm going to bed. Good night." She leaves. The two men go to bed. And at midnight, a giant lance, like a lightning strike, zaps through the room and lands directly on the bed. And skims the knight's skin just a little bit, not entirely, just enough to cause him to bleed a little. But it lands on the bed. Both Gawain and the knight are startled awake, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the bed catches fire, because somehow the lance caused it to catch fire. The bed erupts in flames. Gawain is like, "Oh my god!" The other knight just goes, "Well, alright, no big deal." Takes off his shirt, puts out the flames with the shirt. The flames die down. The fire dies. His bed is a little tarnished. It's alright, nothing he can't deal with. And he goes to bed. He says, "I will sleep in this bed no matter what." And he lays back down in the bed and goes back to sleep. The next morning, the lady comes back to wake them up for Mass, because they have a little chapel downstairs, and they're both required to go to Mass before they continue on about their day, as was usual in medieval times. The men get up, the lady says nothing about the bed, nothing about the lance or about the fire, and instead prepares them for their day, and gets their armor together and all of their weapons and things, and sacks and whatever, ready to go for the day. Gets their horses, gets the stable boy to get their horses ready, all that jazz. Meanwhile, Gawain talks to the girl by the window. They're in the hall overlooking the courtyard now. So they're looking out the window while everything is being made ready for them. Gawain and the girl start talking privately, and Kletchen interrupts the story here, as he always does, and says, "I assure you, I don't know what words they spoke between each other." It's like, all right, buddy, you're so ridiculous. So Gawain and the girl are probably flirting it up. The knight is looking out the window as well, and all of a sudden, he sees a coffin being taken along the riverbank. This is the River Thames, by the way. He sees a coffin being taken along a riverbank. A whole crowd is following this coffin. At the head of the crowd is a very tall knight. He's very muscular. And beside him, he is being escorted by none other than Queen Guinevere. The knight immediately feels such a need to be next to the Queen Guinevere that as soon as she's out of sight, he runs to the window and makes himself ready to jump out of it so that he can die, because his life is worth nothing if he's not next to the queen right now, this very second. This is love at first sight, guys. It just keeps getting better from here. And also it makes sense because Kletchen's idea of love is that it can only be love if the heart suffers. I can't. It literally says, when he could no longer see her, he wanted to throw himself from the window and shatter his body on the ground below. He was already half out the window when my lord Gawain saw him, and after dragging him back inside, said to him, "For pity's sake, sir, calm down. For the love of God, never think of doing such a foolish thing again. You were wrong to hate your life." "No, it is right he should," countered the girl. "For won't the news of his disgrace in the cart be known to all? He certainly should want to be killed, for he's better off dead than living. Henceforth, his life is shamed, scorned, and wretched." And then the two knights are looking at her like, what did she just say? Wow, such a gracious host. Anyway, at that point, the knight's like, all right, I'm so done with this. I gotta go. I've got a queen to save. I'm sitting here dilly-dallying while that beauty walks the earth and I haven't claimed her as my own yet. Gawain is like, all right, you need to chill. But yes, we do need to get going. So they go about their way. They continue on their quest and they come to a crossroads and they meet a girl at the crossroads and she tells them that the queen was taken by my lord Meleagant into a place where no foreigner returns. So good luck. The two of them ask her more questions and ask if she could please elaborate a little bit. And she says there are two ways to get there, and both ways are very treacherous. So, recap. Sir Meleagant, or Prince Meleagant, or whatever, this guy Meleagant is holding Guinevere captive in his tower with his father, the king. So, they've discovered that. There are two ways to get there. Both of them are very treacherous, says the girl. One way is the underwater bridge. I can only imagine that it is what it sounds like. Number two is the sword bridge. Some of you may know that from Monty Python or from Excalibur, the movie. Anyway, it is what it sounds like. The sword bridge. So, Gawain and the knight, who I think we can start calling Lancelot because we all know that the knight is Lancelot. Gawain and Lancelot decide to split up and go this way and one go that way. That way we can, you know, assure that one of us will at least find the queen. So they split up. Gawain decides to go to the underwater bridge. Lancelot decides to go to the sword bridge. They split up, and the girl reminds them, right as both of them are leaving. She says, "I'm reminding you that I have just given you very helpful information, and that one day If I need it, you need to return the favor to me as well. If I need something, you need to return me the favor. Or at least grant me a wish for giving you this helpful information. And they both, of course, agree. And she says, okay, cool. We're on good terms. See you later. Good luck. So they leave. Gawain is going over on his way to the underwater bridge. He's sitting there going, all right, I'm going to find the queen. We're going to do this. It's a good start. We're off to a good start here. Lancelot, on the other hand, is so enamored with the sight of Guinevere that he saw earlier that morning that he cannot think straight. He can't focus on riding his horse. He's all kinds of twisted up and just not focused. It says, the knight of the cart was lost in thought. A man with no strength or defense against love, which torments him. His thoughts were so deep that he forgot who he was. He was uncertain whether or not he truly existed. He was unable to recall his own name. He did not know if he were armed or not, nor where he was going, nor whence he came. He remembered nothing at all, save one creature, for whom he forgot all others. He was so intent upon her alone that he did not hear, see, or pay attention to anything. Damn, friend. Okay, so then he finally comes to a ford, and his horse is very thirsty. It's been riding around all day. It's tired. So the horse starts going towards the ford, instinctively, to get a drink. There is a knight, guarding the ford. And the knight calls out to Lancelot and says, hey, you can't cross this ford. I guard this ford, and you can't cross it unless you defeat me. And Lancelot is not paying attention. Like it said, he can't hear or see or anything except Guinevere. So he doesn't even see the knight or hear the knight in front of him. The knight's going, excuse me, you can't cross the ford unless you defeat me. Meanwhile, Lancelot's horse is still going towards the ford to get a drink. He gets closer and closer, you get the picture. Finally, the horse takes a drink. The knight from the ford comes charging at Lancelot. Lancelot is still in dreamland. Tweet, tweet, all the birds are twittering around him, whatever. The knight comes slamming his lance down on Lancelot. Lancelot gets knocked off his horse and falls into the water. The cold water wakes him up, and he snaps back to reality and goes, oh, wow, I just got knocked off my horse. What just happened? Who are you, sir? And the guy says, I am the guard of this ford. And Lancelot goes, how dare you strike another man who did nothing to you? And the guard says, I told you, coming from ahead, that you had to defeat me first before I could let you cross. And Lancelot goes, oh, well, I didn't hear you. Okay, let's fight it out then. And so they fight it out. Lancelot is very reluctant to do so, but they fight it out. Lancelot wins. The guard gets knocked over. Lancelot crosses the ford. And, backtrack, he's just about to behead the knight because this guy gave him such a hard time, when suddenly a girl from literally out of nowhere comes up to him and begs Lancelot to spare this guy's life. She says, if you do, I will help you. Whenever you need my help, I will give you aid. Please spare his life. And Lancelot goes, all right, fine, whatever. But you have to promise me to help me out whenever I need it. She goes, yep, we're good, deal. Lancelot agrees and moves on. There's a lot of promises here in this story, something I've noticed. A lot of promises to give aid whenever needed, or a lot of granting wishes if need be, if you will do such and such task for me. There's a lot of that here, so pay attention to that because it's really important. So Lancelot moves on. He's been riding around all day. He's tired. His horse is tired. They come across this lady's house as we're nearing nightfall here. The lady sees him coming from afar and says, oh, sir, you look really tired. Lancelot goes, yup. She said, you can stay in my house for the night if you promise to sleep with me. He says, oh, my heart's kind of already taken, so I'd rather not sleep with you, but I'd still like your hospitality because I'm really hungry and tired and cold. And she says, nope, you can't stay with me unless you sleep with me, sir. That is the deal. Another deal. He says, okay, all right, fine. So, he comes into the lady's house. They're now in Thessaly, by the way, just so you have an idea of where they are geographically. They're now all the way in Greece. Anyway, he goes into the house. It's a big house. It's like a manor. And there's nobody there. There's just her, alone, No servants, no guards, no nothing. Literally this one woman in this giant ass house, which was unheard of. And Lancelot's a little skeptical about the situation, but he's in desperate need of food and a bed. So whatever he's got to do, he's got to do. The girl gives him food. She gives him new clothes. She makes sure that he's well cared for, blah, blah, blah. She tells him to go outside in the courtyard while she makes ready the bedchamber. Lancelot sighs, and he goes out into the courtyard to chill. But it's been a little while, and he's starting to wonder if she's ready yet. It's been like a couple hours. He goes back in to check on her, and the girl is lying naked across her bed with another knight who has his pants down and is right up against her and looks as though he's attacked her. There are other knights in the room as well who are watching. Lancelot's going, oh my god, what happened here in the span of, what, an hour that I've been gone? And then he hesitates for a quick second because he thinks, oh, if I leave now, I won't have to deal with sleeping with her, and then I can still be pure for my Queen Guinevere in the hopes that I might get to lay with her, even though I know she's the wife of my king. But, you know, optimistically thinking. And then he realizes, maybe it's better that I help her because she looks pretty defenseless right now, and this is all wrong, and this guy's a rapist, and I should probably help her out. All right, I'll help her out. Lancelot goes, and he fights all the guys and defeats them all. There are still a couple guards left watching. But then the lady gets up, and she's like, oh, well, all right, we're done here. You guys can go, she says to the other knights, and Lancelot realizes that it was all a trick. She says, you defended me well, sir, against my entire household. Now, come with me. And she leads him to bed. Lancelot lays in the bed, turned over on his side with his back facing her, with his eyes wide open. He's had a rough day. The girl realizes how awkward this is and says, I'm gonna go sleep in my other room. I'm realizing now that this is awkward for you, and you've already done so much for me today that I could never ask for anything more from you. I see how strong and courageous you are, so I'm satisfied. You don't have to sleep with me. Good night. Lancelot's like, what is going on? Fine, okay, cool. The next day, Lancelot's ready to go. He's about to take off, and the girl comes out and says, hey, I just want to thank you for keeping your promise. Guys, another promise keeping. Important. The girl says, I just want to thank you again for keeping your promise. You promised that you would sleep with me, and even though I said you didn't have to, you still kept that promise even after I put you through so much crap. So that really means a lot, and I think you're a very honorable guy. So because you kept your promise, I will escort you part of the way to the sword bridge because I know where it is, and I know you don't, and you're a foreigner here, so I can take you some of the way there. And Lancelot goes, I'd really rather you didn't. This is kind of a solo gig. And she says, well, you're gonna get lost. And he goes, you're probably right. All right, you can escort me. So the girl goes with him and escorts him, leads him, rather, part of the way to the sword bridge. On the way, they come across a spring. And at the spring is a stone. And on the stone is a comb made of ivory. And it's got little golden hairs in it still, as if it had been used recently. The girl, who is leading him, sees the spring and the stone and the comb and quickly turns the other way and says, oops, we're going the wrong way, follow me. And Lancelot goes, what? The road is this way, where are you going? And she says, we need to go this way, it's probably better. And he's like, no, let's keep following the road, it would only make sense. And then he sees the spring and he sees the stone and he sees the comb. And he goes, wow, what a pretty comb. He goes over to it, picks it up, and the girl snatches it out of his hand and says, let me see it. And she realizes, well, she admits, rather, that this comb belonged to none other than the queen, Queen Guinevere. Lancelot almost falls off his horse. He almost kind of does, and she holds him up so he doesn't fall off his horse, and she thinks that he fainted, and he kind of did. at the sound of her name. Ugh. Oh, Clutchin. She admits that she led Lancelot, or tried to lead Lancelot, the other way because she was jealous and she didn't want him to come across the comb, and she wanted to have him for herself, and she knew that Lancelot was on a quest to find the queen, blah blah blah. Lancelot goes, "It's fine, you're okay. Can we keep going though?" And she says, "Yes, of course." And right then, another knight comes along, big, tall, macho guy, comes along, and the girl hides behind Lancelot and goes, "Oh no, God, it's him." And he goes, "Who? Who's that guy?" And she says, "It's the guy who loves me." And he goes, "Wait, so you already have a guy who loves you and you're sitting here trying to steal Guinevere's comb from..." And she tells him that this guy has been stalking her and is super creepy and very rude and pompous and has been following her around like her entire life, talking about how much he loves her. Basically the same thing Lancelot has been doing to Guinevere. Awkward. Anyway, the guy sees the girl. The guy goes, "Oh! It's you, my love!" The girl goes, "I am not your love." The guy says, "Oh, yes, you will come with me now, and I shall have you for my own, because I haven't seen you alone on the road ever before, and so now I have the chance to take you as my own." And Lancelot goes, "She's not alone, she has me. I mean, I'll defend her, because she says you're creepy." And he goes, "Oh, you're no match for me. I can take her, I can take you on any day." And Lancelot goes, "Do you want to bet?" And the guy says, "Alright, fine, we're gonna fight it out." And so Lancelot and the guy decide to go over to this other field that's nearby where a bunch of people are chilling out. Everybody's having like a picnic day or whatever. People are dancing around and playing games and playing with flowers and whatever. It's a very nice little spring kind of picnicky day on this battlefield. Lancelot and this macho guy charge onto the field, ruining everybody's nice afternoon. And they say, "We're gonna fight it out." And very coincidentally, this macho man's father is waiting there with a bunch of other knights, probably enjoying the afternoon's festivities, etc. But the guy's dad is there, and the guy's dad says, "Are you after this girl again? What has gotten into you?" And the guy says, "Yes, father, I'm gonna defeat this stupid man who's escorting her, and then she will be mine forever." And the guy's dad says, "I don't know, that guy seems, he seems pretty tough. He seems like he could kind of kick your butt. I think you better back down, buddy." And the guy says, "How dare you, father? You think so little of me? I'm gonna kick his butt." And then the fighting commences, and Lancelot kicks his butt. And the guy's dad says, "I told you," and he gets his knights who are standing by to seize his son so that the guy can do no more harm to Lancelot, to which little harm has really been done anyway. And the guy eventually, the macho guy, is forced to surrender to Lancelot and let Lancelot continue with the girl along the road. Jeez, can't these guys just travel a couple miles without going through something? Anyway, so they're going down the road and they continue. And actually, the guy and his father follow Lancelot and the girl just because the guy's father wants to show his son what an example of a true knight is, and how he should behave while escorting a maiden on the road, etc. So they're going along the road. Lancelot and the girl don't realize they're being followed. It's really not that big of a deal anyway, because it doesn't lead to anything, but I just thought I'd mention that because it's in the story. They finally get to a church. Lancelot decides to stop in the church because every knight stops in a church to pray when they're on the road on a quest. It's simply what was done. So he stops in the church. The girl goes along with him. Lancelot realizes that the church is in a cemetery, in a graveyard. And he goes, "Wow, we're in a cemetery." And the guy says, "Yes." And Lancelot suddenly sees a grave that's open. I mean, it's not filled. A grave for Sir Gawain and Sir Ivaine and Sir Lionel. And says, "What are these?" And the guy says, the hermit who runs the church and the cemetery is talking to Lancelot and says, "These are the graves for the greatest knights. Here will lie King Arthur's greatest knights." And Lancelot goes, "Wow, that's kind of exciting. This is kind of a cool place. What's that one over there?" Because Lancelot has spotted another grave, a giant grave that's really big and elaborate and really nice, kind of like that really big and really nice bed that Lancelot slept in that caught fire. He goes, what's that one for? And the guy, the old hermit guy, says, oh, well that's for the person who's going to free everyone in this land. Did you hear that everyone here that's a foreigner can't leave this land? Once you enter this land, you can never return to whence you came. And Lancelot goes, yeah, I've heard that actually. That's a little ridiculous. I don't know why they can't just leave. And he goes, no, there's a curse on the land. You can't just leave here, but the person whose grave this will belong to one day is going to free everybody. And the only person whose grave this will belong to is the person who can move this slab off of the grave. There is a giant marble slab lying on the grave, guys. It's huge. It's enough. It's big enough that maybe it might be able to be moved if, like, 10 men are pushing it. So Lancelot sees the slab and goes, oh, you mean this slab? Goes over and pushes it over like it's a piece of paper. The old hermit does not know what to do with himself, freaks out and fanboys for a second, drops to his knees, and says, oh my god, you are going to be the man who frees everyone in this land. God bless you forever, blah blah blah. Lancelot goes, oh, gee, thanks. I just wanna help everybody out, you know? I'm really just trying to find my queen, but, you know, whatever, if I have to free everybody in the process, that's fine. So he leaves out of there, and the girl says, are we done? Can we go? He goes, yep, let's keep going. The other people behind them, the guy, the macho guy that Lancelot defeated, and the guy's father, talk to the hermit, and the hermit says, you have no idea who just walked out of here. That guy is going to be our savior. He's going to free everyone in this land. He's going to be the greatest knight that ever lived. And the dad goes, you see, son, that's why I wanted you not to fight him. I would never have wanted you to fight such a man. We're gonna go home. That's the end of that story. I don't know why that's included in the story. Kree-chan has all of these subplots that never amount to anything, but I just thought I'd let you guys know so you can have an idea, so you know what's going on in the story, for those of you who aren't familiar with Kree-chan. Before Lancelot leaves, the old hermit falls to his knees again in front of Lancelot and begs him, I'm backtracking here, I forgot to say this, begs him to know his name. Oh, sir, what is your name? Who are you? Lancelot, for the third time now, says, I cannot reveal my identity. I'm sorry. You're just gonna have to know me as the Knight of the Cart. That's what everyone seems to be calling me. And he goes, no, but you must tell me your name. What is your name? He even asks the girl, do you know his name? You've been escorting him all this time. Surely you must know his name. She goes, actually, I don't know his name. I really actually don't know anything about him except that he's a pretty noble guy. He says, oh, then I'll just have to call you the Knight of the Cart. And henceforth, that's what he was known as. Lancelot and the girl continue on. As the day goes on, the girl wants to know more and more what Lancelot's name is. She starts asking him and saying, hey, you know, you never really told me much about yourself. Why don't we talk? Like, who are you? Who are you really? He doesn't give in at all. He wants nothing to do with her and is growing more and more annoyed with her as time goes on. Finally, the girl shouts, tell me your name! And Lancelot says, no. And she says, okay. Alright. Can I go home now? He says, yeah. I've wished that for a while now. And the girl departs. Now, Lancelot, at the end of the day, he always very coincidentally arrives just in time at some house that he can stay in for the night, just as nightfall is approaching. I think it's so funny how it happens that way, but it's also a very good thing. Lancelot arrives at this house. A guy, a Vavasor, comes out and says, oh, sir, do you need lodging? You can stay at my house. Lancelot says, yes, I do. Thank you so much, sir. The guy invites him in. He's got a wife. He's got three kids, a daughter, and these two sons who are also knights, or trying to be knights, rather. And everyone tries to serve Lancelot. Everybody's working to serve dinner. Everybody's really nice. Everybody's super welcoming. And they all want to know every single thing about him. They want to know his name, who he is, where he came from. Lancelot says nothing except that he's from the land of Logres. And they say, oh, that's where we're from too. We're from Logres. Literally everyone here is from Logres. And he says, really? Wow, what are they all doing here? And he said, they can't leave. Everyone who enters this land remains here as a prisoner. And Lancelot remembers that that's what the old hermit told him and several other people now. And so he says, well, I'm going to free them. And he tells these nice people of his quest. And the two sons say, oh, we know where the sword bridge is. Please, father, can we escort this knight to the sword bridge? And the father says, yeah, of course. Absolutely, I would have it no other way. And Lancelot goes, yeah, that would be great. I really need some direction. And the guys say, yay! So, the two sons and Lancelot set out the next day. I'ma call them the squad, because they're the squad now. These guys are really great. The three of them go on this quest together. The two sons lead Lancelot to the sword bridge. But before they get there, they have to go through the stone passage. And the stone passage is a very rocky area with a very narrow road. And it's very dangerous, and there's all kinds of bandits and all kinds of evil things lurking about in the shadows there. They ride through the stone passage, and a man appears and asks who they are very urgently. They don't say who they are. They know to protect Lancelot's identity, even though they don't know who it is, but they know better than to let the guy know that Lancelot has an identity, other than the knight of the cart. The guy says, why don't you stay in my house for the night? The sword bridge isn't far away, you can stay in my house, and then tomorrow you can set out. The squad says, okay, sounds good. The man starts to lead them to his house, and all of a sudden, a squire appears very urgently. Guys, there's this huge battle going on downhill, there's a bunch of skirmishes that have broken out, everything has gone to hell, because this guy is here who has invaded this land, who says he's gonna free all the people that have come here, and now all hell is broken loose, you guys have to come and help. And the two sons look over at Lancelot and go, oh my god, they're talking about you. He says, I know, let's go fight. And the three of them, as a squad, very happily enter this melee. They go and rush into the battle and defeat a bunch of people. At the end of the battle, their side ends up winning. And everyone turns to Lancelot and goes, who are you, sir, who have helped defeat this battle? Or defeat our enemy? And he says, I am the knight of the cart. I'm from Logres, like you people. And they say, wow, our savior has come to free us all, yay! And everybody tries to reach out to touch Lancelot in some way. He becomes almost a godly figure. Everyone starts trying to talk to him and beg him to stay with them for the night. They're begging him to use their lodgings for the evening. They're asking him if they can make him supper. They're asking him if they can bring him anything. Whatever he needs, they will be his servant. Women are fainting over him. He is literally becoming a celebrity within seconds here. The two sons are like, wow, we're so lucky. This guy's so cool. Lancelot says, guys, it's okay. I'm going to stay with these two friends of mine. We'll figure out where we're going to stay. And that doesn't work out very well. Literally, fights, like actual fights, break out between all of these people on where Lancelot is going to stay. And Lancelot finally goes, yo, everybody chill. And everyone stops, and they look at him. And he says, let's all not argue about this. This is ridiculous. Everything's gonna be fine. I'm gonna stay with this knight over here, this random guy who I just met. He seems pretty cool. I'm gonna stay with him. Now everybody chill. And I'll see you guys all in the morning, I guess, if you want to see me off. Everyone agrees to that. And the next morning, you can guarantee that everybody was outside his front door, outside this knight's front door, cheering and waving their ribbons and escorting Lancelot down the road a little bit until he has gone enough of a distance to go by himself with the other two guys, the two sons. And everyone is waving him goodbye. It's literally like the Wizard of Oz when Dorothy is going down the yellow brick road and all the little munchkins are waving goodbye, goodbye. Like, that's what I think of when I think of all these people waving Lancelot goodbye. Girls are weeping in the streets because Lancelot is leaving their presence. It's just ridiculous, y'all. Anyway, Lancelot waves goodbye and continues with his lovely guides that are leading him to the sword bridge. The squad rides all day and all next day. And that night, they arrive at a lord and lady's manor. The kids come out, because he has kids. They come out and greet Lancelot and invite him to stay at their house for the night. Lancelot and the two sons stay in the house for the night. They meet the lord of the manor and all the kids, and everybody tries to serve him well and serve them all well, and it's very nice, and they have a very nice dinner and blah blah blah, and they give them new clothes, all the same things that people usually do when they stay at their house on a quest. While they're having dinner, all of a sudden a knight calls out from the window, which is open, I guess. "Hey, you! You guys in there! I'm looking for the knight who calls himself the Knight of the Cart. Who is this guy that says he's gonna save everybody and let all these people go free? Who is he? I know he's in there." Lancelot goes, "Oh, hey, that's me. What's up? Do you need something?" The guy says, "You! I want to fight you because you will not let those people go." Lancelot goes, I'm in the middle of eating dinner, but, I mean, if you want to fight, I guess. I mean, can it wait?" The guy goes, "No, I'm going to fight you right now." Lancelot says, okay, I'm coming. Let me get my armor and my sword and stuff." He goes to get his equipment. He and the guy get ready to fight. They fight. And, of course, Lancelot kicks his butt. Lancelot has him on his knees, ready to behead him. The knight says, "You should be ashamed of yourself for riding in a cart and then showing your face. You dare to show your face anywhere after riding in a cart? Who do you think you are? Now you think you're gonna save everybody from this land?" Lancelot goes, "May I remind you, I have a sword to your neck right now. Do you want me to spare you?" The knight on the ground says, "Yes." Lancelot says, "Then you will have to ride in a cart." And the knight says, "No, please, God, I'd rather die." Lancelot says, "Okay, fine." He's about to behead him, and all of a sudden, once again, a girl comes into the scene and interrupts everything and says, "Wait! Sir, I need something from you. I'm in desperate need." She really is in desperate need. She's wearing, like, rags, and her hair is looking a mess. Lancelot says, I'm a little busy. Can it wait?" And she says, "No, I just want to know if you will do something for me, and if you do..." Here we go again with the promises. "If you do, I will help you whenever you are greatest in need. Anything you want, but I just need this one thing." And Lancelot goes, "What, lady, what?" And she says, "I need the head of that guy that you're about to kill." And he goes, "Oh my God, you could have told me that after I did it, but okay, fine, yes, it's a deal." He beheads the guy. He gives her the head. She's very happy and satisfied because... apparently, he did some nasty things to her, and she wanted her revenge, and she got it. And she looks into Lancelot's eyes and says, "I will so help you anytime you are ever in need." Lancelot goes, "I don't really know when we're going to run into each other again, but if we ever do, that would be great. Thanks. Have a nice day." She goes, "Okay, thanks, you too." They part ways. And then everybody goes back into the house for dinner. To continue their dinner, which they never really got to have. Also, I forgot to mention, his host family here didn't really know that Lancelot had been riding in a cart earlier. So when this knight proclaimed it aloud for everyone to hear, the family was like, "Oh, what? We've been having dinner with a man who rode in a cart?" But anyway, it's all good now. Everything's fine. Nothing is awkward anymore. They all have a very nice, non-awkward dinner. Then they sleep, and then the next day, Lancelot and the two sons continue to the sword bridge. They finally get to the sword bridge. It's terrifying. It's literally a giant sword, and it's very sharp, and beneath it is what's actually the scary part. Beneath it is this swirling cyclone-looking thing of a body of water. It's dark and deep and treacherous, and literally falling into it would be like falling into the abyss. It's terrifying. And on top of that, icing on the cake, across the sword bridge are two hungry lions waiting for their lunch. This is just a delightful situation. Lancelot's eyeing his circumstances, looking around at everything, examining everything, takes a deep breath and goes, "All right, let's get started." The two sons fall to their knees and beg Lancelot not to go. They're like, look below at that. That's so scary. And there are two lions across the bridge that are waiting to eat you. You are crazy to cross this bridge. Please don't cross. We beg you. They literally start crying and weeping, begging him not to cross. And Lancelot goes, "Y'all need to get it together. Be a man. It's all good. I'm going to cross the bridge. Everything's going to be fine. I'm going to rescue the queen. And then you guys can go back to your family and tell them all that I did the thing, and you guys led me very bravely. Thank you very much for your service. And he crosses the bridge. And in order to cross the bridge, he has to unarm himself because the armor would make it too slippery. And it gets very narrow at one point because it's a sword, an actual literal sword, guys. So Lancelot takes off almost all of his, well, all of his armor, and then almost all of his clothes too, because the clothes make it slippery. So he takes off his shoes, his stockings, everything, so that he's basically wearing a shirt and some pants, kinda, and his bare feet, and that's it. Everything else is gone. He has to leave it all behind on the other side, and he has to crawl on hands and knees to the other side, because that's the only way to get across without slipping to his death. So, he crosses the bridge. It's very sharp. He cuts up his hands. He's bleeding, like, ridiculous amounts of blood on his hands, on his knees, on his feet, his toes. He's sweating like crazy because it's hot, and also because it's a little slightly nerve-wracking. He keeps trying not to look down at the water, but it's a little hard to avoid. Finally, he makes it across the bridge. He's all kinds of bleeding everywhere. His hair's a mess, his body's a mess, he's weak as hell, he's dripping with sweat, drenched in it. He looks like a shaggy mess, and he is exhausted. The two sons on the other side see that he made it, and they cheer and holler and praise him and bless him and send him all of their hope and optimistic prayers, etc. Lancelot is looking all kinds of shaggy and all kinds of messed up, but he made it. And the lions are gone. And he gives thanks to God that he made it across. Now he can finally find this stupid tower and rescue Guinevere. Fast enough! He walks like 2 steps away from the bridge and forward towards his destination, and he sees the tower. And on the tower balcony is resting King Bademagu. Or Bedamgu. Bedmagu. It's French. No one knows how to pronounce it because it's Kletchan. Anyway, I say Bedamgu. Bademagu. I have to choose one. We'll call him King Bad, even though he's not a bad king. He's actually a very good king, as we'll find out in a second. But King Bad is just easier to say. So, he sees King Bad resting on this this tower balcony. And we cut away from Lancelot, if this were a movie, and cut over to King Bad. And King Bad is resting on the balcony, goes back inside to tell his son, Meleagant. Remember Meleagant, the one who's holding Guinevere captive? That the night has come to rescue the queen. The night that we all knew was going to come because we all heard by word of mouth that a knight was coming to rescue everybody in the land and save everybody and also to rescue the queen. And he is here. And Meleagant goes, oh, let me down to him at once. I will rip him to shreds. And the king, very much like the other king that we saw in that field where everybody was playing and having a picnic, the father, this king, also a father, says to his son, kiddo, I don't think you should do this. That guy looks like he could beat you up. And the son, Meleagant, very prideful, just like the other guy, says, I don't care what you say, there is nothing you can do to stop me from killing this knight. And the dad says, okay, whatever you say, I'm gonna stop you, but you go ahead and try to kill this guy. I think you're wrong to do it, and I think you're an awful person keeping this queen captive. She never did anything to you. King Arthur never did anything to you. This queen doesn't love you. You're just really stupid. And the son says, I don't care what you think of me. I'm going to go fight this guy. No one can have my queen. And so, what do you think happens? Lancelot meets the king. First, Lancelot meets the king, King Bad. And the king is super gracious and super knight. The king wants to make sure he gets down there before his son does. And he does, and he greets Lancelot, and he gives him all kinds of accommodations and says, here's a chamber you can stay in. It's very nice. Everything that you need anything that you need at all, you just let me know and I'll have my servants get it for you. I really want to welcome you here. I'm so sorry that this guy, my son, wants to kill you. I'm really sorry about that. Also, I'm sorry that he took the queen. I know you're here to rescue her, and I would gladly just hand her over to you if I could. And Lancelot goes, well, I mean, you are the king. You could just hand her over to me. And he goes, yeah, but he would probably kill me for doing so. He's my son, and he's slightly more powerful than I am, so I kind of don't have a say, but I'm going to try to convince him not to fight you. Lancelot goes, that's fine. I can fight whoever. I'm Lancelot! And the king says, okay, well, heal your wounds, and then you can fight my son. So that's what he does. The next day, in the square... Okay, guys, just to set this up for you. In the square, where the king and Meleagant, Prince Meleagant, had set up for him to fight Lancelot over the queen. In the square are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds upon hundreds of peasants and noble women and noblemen alike, all waiting to watch this fight. Guys, they were camped out there for days. This is literally like a concert. Like, if you were going to see... Like, I remember when I was in middle school and I went to see the Jonas Brothers concert. Don't judge me. And everyone was camped outside the venue like 3 days before the concert just to make sure they got tickets and good seats. They had all their Jonas Brothers shirts and merchandise and stuff, and everyone was wearing these painted glasses and everyone had painted their cars. It was insane, you guys. And this was basically that. Everyone was camped out wearing like Lancelot's famous like signature shield and like herald of arms. Like, everyone was wearing his symbols. He has these three stripes on his shield, okay? Three red stripes on a white shield. And everyone was wearing his heraldry and making sure that they were on the side that Lancelot was gonna fight on. Everyone was camped out to see this fight. It was gonna be such a big deal. It was a huge deal. In the square, well, from the square, you can see the tower. And at the tower stood Guinevere and her one servant that she was allowed while she was held captive. Okay, the fight begins. It's a big deal. Everyone's watching. They might as well have had popcorn. Everyone's so excited. Guinevere watches from the tower. She doesn't know who this knight is who's come to rescue her. She just knows it's some random knight who has come to rescue her. Her servant wants to know who this knight is because she has a plan. Now, keep this in mind for future Kletchen romances, that the servant is the one who wants to help. This is not the first time this happens. There are several other occurrences where the servant is the one who saves the day. Or, you know, helps out at least. So, the fight's about to begin. The king comes into the square. He goes over to his son, Meleagant. He goes, son, please, can we please not do this? You don't have to fight him. He seems like a really good guy. Of course, Meleagant says, no, I'm gonna fight him to the death. I'm gonna kill him and strangle him and blah, blah, blah. The king sighs and says, okay, fine, fight. And the fight begins. And both men are doing pretty well. And kind of towards the end, Meleagant is starting to gain up a little bit on Lancelot. And it's clear that Lancelot is starting to lack a little bit. And everyone in the square is like, oh no! And the servant in Guinevere's tower sees this. Her plan is still brewing. She runs to Guinevere, who's, I guess, watching from a different window. The servant says, my lady, do you know who that knight is? Do you have any idea who he could be? And Guinevere looks harder, and she recognizes his armor, and says, oh, that's Sir Lancelot. And the servant goes, oh, thank you, my lady, thank you so much, blah, 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 you've made me so happy. Guinevere's like, what? What's going on? The servant opens the window from the tower and shouts down to the square to Lancelot, Sir Lancelot, turn around to see who's watching you. And Lancelot turns around and sees Guinevere, and everything stops. His fighting stops. Literally, he freezes and becomes like a marble statue, and is so enamored with the sight of her that he practically falls to his knees and falls faint. And she, the servant, did this because she thought it would inspire hope and would make him even stronger and would help him continue to kick Maligant's butt so that he could finish this fight and win and come out on top. But instead, it made him weaker because he's now very distracted to the point where the servant goes, hello, get it together! And Lancelot goes, oh yeah, and he snaps out of it. And he maneuvers himself around Maligant so that he can face the tower and look at Guinevere while he's fighting Maligant. Then he starts kicking butt, and it's really good, and he's super on top of it to the point where Maligant is really getting brutally defeated right now. And the king calls up to Guinevere and says, please make Lancelot stop fighting him so my son isn't killed. And Guinevere says that this is her wish, calling from the tower, and Lancelot, of course, obeys any word that could possibly leave the queen's mouth. So, he stops fighting Maligant. But Maligant, who is now ashamed at having his father have to beg Lancelot not to kill him, takes it out on Lancelot and beats Lancelot up like crazy. Lancelot is almost on his deathbed. He's barely hanging in there. Guinevere is like, oh my god, my knight! And the king says, wait, wait, please stop. You're gonna kill him too now. And Maligant stops, and he says, okay, I will make a deal. Another deal, guys. There's so many deals in this story. Maligant says, I will release Lancelot and release the queen only if Lancelot agrees to fight me 1 year from today in Camelot, in front of everyone at his kingdom. And Lancelot, of course, agrees, and everyone else thinks it sounds good. And so it's agreed. The fight is ended. Everyone's cheering, everyone had a great time, people are starting to go back about their business and whatever, talking about how great the fight was. Everyone disperses. Lancelot goes right up to the king and says, sir, will you please take me to see Queen Guinevere now? The king says, of course, of course. He leads Lancelot up the tower to see Guinevere. They're going up the stairs, they come into the hallway where her chamber is, and there is Queen Guinevere in all her glory, standing in the hallway in some beautiful dress with her golden hair flowing down. Lancelot falls to his knees before her, and all Guinevere says is, what could you possibly have to say to me? And Lancelot goes, what? I'm sorry? The queen addresses the king and doesn't even address Lancelot anymore and says, I have no wish to see him. I have no interest in him whatsoever. Please take him out of my sight. And she goes into her chamber and shuts the door behind her. Lancelot is beyond confused, obviously. He's kneeling there with tears in his eyes, just might as well have been a puddle of water on the floor. The king, who definitely shipped this relationship originally, is standing there going, I don't know what just happened. What did I just walk in on? I feel really bad. I don't know why she acted that way, but Sir Kay is here too if you want to say hi to him and free him. Lancelot goes, yeah, I think I'd like that. So then he takes him to see Sir Kay, whom no one's asked about yet at all throughout the whole rest of the story. Guinevere wasn't the only one who was captured. Kay was captured as well, if you guys remember. And has anyone ever asked about Kay? Literally, the only person that Lancelot has asked anyone about or has looked for at all throughout this whole story has been Guinevere. Literally, no one has asked about Kay at all. Not that I blame them, because no one likes Kay, but he's still Arthur's brother and he was still captured. So anyway, finally, Lancelot acknowledges the fact that he was also captured and goes to rescue him. So the king takes him to see Kay. He enters the chamber. Kay is standing there, sees Lancelot, and says, I don't want to see him. He has shamed me. I want nothing to do with him. Lancelot goes, are you serious? Do you know what I've been through to rescue both of you guys? What is up? And Kay goes, well, you shamed me because you did what I failed to do, which is to come and rescue the queen and free all the people. And I'm still here, stuck in this cell. So I want nothing to do with you. so petty. Lancelot rolls his eyes and says, can we just talk like mature adults here? Can you not be petty for once in your life? Can we just talk about this? And Kay says, okay, fine. They catch up. Kay tells him all that he's been through. He says he's been tortured. He says he's been through a lot of awful stuff, but the king has been nothing but helpful to him. So he's very grateful to the king. Lancelot says, yeah, that's the way it seems to be. Kay says, have you seen Guinevere yet? Lancelot says, oh yeah, I've seen Guinevere, and tells Kay what happened, and Kay goes, wow, dude, I don't know what to tell you about that. That's pretty rough. I don't know why she's acting like that. Lancelot says, I don't either. I have no idea, but you guys are free now whenever you want to go. Kay says, well, thank you for coming to rescue us. And for once, Kay is really nice and grateful and appreciative. And the two of them kind of have a bro moment. It's really nice. Finally, Lancelot's like, okay, well, I came to rescue the people that I came to rescue. Now, I need to go find Gawain, because the last time that we talked was a long time ago, and we separated ways, and he went to the underwater bridge, and I did the sword bridge, so I don't really know if Gawain got here or not, and I'm gonna get my mind off of my girl problems by going to see Gawain. So, he asks for leave to go find Gawain. The king gives him leave. Lancelot goes in search of Gawain. The group of people that he just freed, all of the people of Logris that he has freed, now follow him. They're almost like his people now. They want to follow him wherever he goes. So they follow Lancelot in search of Gawain. But they come across a group of locals who were not at the square to see the fight today. And they see Lancelot and say, oh, you're that guy, that the knight of the cart that everyone has said is going to free everybody. And all the group of people say, yeah, that is the guy. We're all free. And the locals go, oh, no, we're not. And they think that if they take Lancelot back to King Bad, that they will be praised because they didn't see that Lancelot had just defeated the prince. And the group of people say, no, no, no. The king literally just freed us all. We're all good to go. We just came from the king. He sent us. Now we're on our search for Sir Gawain. And the locals go, I don't think so. I'm going to bring Lancelot and all of you guys right back to the king, and we're going to get some sort of something. So Lancelot goes, no, 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 you're not touching these people. And he starts to fight these guys, but the guys win over Lancelot because Lancelot's a little distracted by the fact that the lady that he loves has dismissed him and doesn't want to talk to him. He's still thinking about that, of course. So the local guys win over Lancelot, and they take Lancelot and the group of people back to the king. And on the way, they make sure to tie Lancelot up to his horse so that he cannot escape. They tie his feet to the horse. Meanwhile, Guinevere, cut to Guinevere in her tower. Guinevere's still in the tower, even though she's been rescued officially, and she can leave whenever she wants. She's still hanging around in the tower because no one's officially come to, like, take her out of the tower because Lancelot has gone to find Gawain. Guinevere has a whole, like, page and a half monologue wondering why Lancelot seemed so upset. And then she realizes that what she said to Lancelot might have hurt his feelings. What? And so we realize, as the reader, that Guinevere said what she did as a joke and expected Lancelot to laugh at it. And I'm thinking that maybe what Clechian meant was that Guinevere said what she did because she kind of assumed that Lancelot already knew that she loved her more than anything in the world, or that Lancelot already knew she loved him more than anything else in the world, and kind of wanted to get away from the king, who was gonna stand there awkwardly watching them while they reunited. So she said, you know, I don't want to see you anymore, to Lancelot, and shut the door behind her so that Lancelot would say, oh no, my lady, what do you mean? And would come in after her so that they could shut the door behind them and make love or something and catch up and be reunited together behind a closed door so they could have privacy. Lancelot didn't catch on to that. I don't know how anyone would have caught on to that. So Guinevere realizes now that this might not have been the best way to greet someone who just went through all that he did to come rescue her, and says, "Oh no, what have I done?" And she's so upset with herself and what she did that she doesn't leave her chamber for, is it a day? Maybe 2 days? However long it takes to get where Lancelot is, because word gets out to wherever Lancelot is on his way back to the king that Guinevere is dead, because no one has seen her and she hasn't left her chamber, so everyone just assumes that she's dead. So what do you think happens? Of course Lancelot tries to take his own life because his queen is dead. So he ties a loop around his belt to the horse, I guess, so that he can flip himself under the horse so that he can hang himself. He ties a loop around his belt and then a noose around his neck. I don't know how this works. Clutchhand described it really strangely, but he ends up finding some way to try to hang himself from the horse so that his body is dragged behind the horse so that he'll die. So he tries to do this. No one around him notices somehow, even though they're all literally following him, this huge-ass group of people that are all being taken back to the king, and no one sees this. Anyway, finally somebody sees something strange and sees that Lancelot's horse is riderless. They look under the horse and see Lancelot's body, and they go, "Oh no, Lancelot fainted." So they try to push him back up on top of the horse. They see the noose around his neck and realize that Lancelot tried to kill himself. They remove the noose. Lancelot can breathe again. He can't talk for another, 4 hours, but he's alive. And the people criticize him for wanting to kill himself, and then Lancelot goes on a huge page-long monologue about why he wants to die. So fun. So, anyway. Eventually, word gets back to Lancelot that Guinevere is in fact not dead. Lancelot rejoices, he's all happy again. They finally get back to the tower. The king greets Lancelot with many happy welcomes. Maleganth goes, ugh. The king takes Lancelot to see Guinevere once again. Let's try this one more time. Round two. Lancelot approaches Queen Guinevere once again. He kneels before her. Guinevere is super nice and super kind and welcoming, and she's so excited to see him. She says, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you. I thought you were dead." And he goes, "I thought you were dead." And the two of them just look at each other, and there's this longing look in both of their eyes, and the two decide to go for a walk through the hallways. They go for a walk, they talk stuff out, and catch up. Lancelot hears all that Guinevere has been through while she's been imprisoned in the tower, and Guinevere likewise hears all of the terrible things that Lancelot has gone through on his way to find her. Finally, Lancelot goes, "So, can I ask a question? Why did you greet me the way that you did a couple days ago when we met again for the first time?" And she says, "Oh, well, because didn't you ride in a cart?" And he says, "Yes, I rode in a cart to find you faster, even though I knew it would ruin me socially." And she says, "Yes, that's fine. But when you got in the cart, you hesitated for 2 seconds. Y'all, do you remember in the beginning of this podcast when I said that Lancelot hesitated for a couple seconds before getting in the cart because it could ruin his social life and potentially end him as a knight, pretty much? It is something to consider before getting in a criminal cart and being ridden around the streets. So he did, yes, hesitate for a second and a half, maybe. And somehow Guinevere heard of this, because I guess all of the stories of the knight in the cart had reached her tower, even though she was in isolation. But somehow she heard of this, and she makes sure to let Lancelot know, "Why, sir, you hesitated 2 seconds before stepping in the cart. So that's why I wanted nothing to do with you. You can certainly understand why I was upset when you came to rescue me." Ugh! I hate her! Sorry. She's so... Oh my god! And guys, the worst part is that this was acceptable behavior for women back then. Can you imagine? How much crap did he have to go through for her to treat him like dust on her feet? I don't understand. Anyway. Ahem. So, Lancelot, of course, understands this and begs her forgiveness and says, please, I beg you to forgive me. I will never hesitate a second ever again for anything that you could possibly wish of me. And she says, okay, fine. I guess I forgive you. It's fine. All is forgiven. And he leaps to his feet and they embrace. And then they pull this Romeo-Juliet stuff where she says, well, we can't meet tonight because people can't see us together. Why not? Everyone already thinks it's romantic that this knight who loves you came to rescue you instead of the king himself. I don't. Anyway, they find a way to meet so that no one will see them at night. So Lancelot goes outside of her tower in the square or the courtyard or whatever to call up to her while she's in her tower. Now, guys, this is where I dare say Shakespeare got his Romeo and Juliet balcony scene from, because Guinevere is standing in her tower looking out from the balcony for Lancelot to climb up the tower to her for them to at least see each other for a spare few seconds or so. And so he climbs her tower and she reaches her hand out to him and they have this whole beautiful scene or whatever where they both talk about how much they want to lay with each other and how vexed they are that a window stands between them, because otherwise they would both be in each other's arms and in each other's beds. Even though it's fine, you know, she is already the wife of King Arthur, but, you know, whatever. It's fine. Cheating's fine. It's fine if it's true love, right? Of course. So, anyway, they have this whole beautiful scene, and then someone's coming, and so Lancelot has to go before anyone sees. And his fingers are so torn up before he leaves, guys. His fingers are so torn up because he had to climb the tower with nothing to climb on. There were no vines or anything that he could use to climb the tower. He scaled the tower with his bare hands so that he could see Guinevere and hold her hand for a couple seconds. Major detail that I forgot to include. Lancelot finds a way to crawl through the window, even though he can barely fit. Crawls through the window and lays with Guinevere in the bed. And they, you know, they have a good time. Next to them is Kay, who I'm pretty sure earlier had his own cell, but now somehow miraculously shares the same cell as Guinevere. Anyway, there are two beds that are lying side by side in this cell, in this chamber. And Kay is laying right there and somehow sleeps through Lancelot and Guinevere having a lovely time under the bedsheets together. I don't know how that happens. Anyway, Lancelot hears someone coming in the middle of the night, and he hurriedly leaves and climbs back down the tower. Lancelot, like I said, had bloody hands. His hands got on the bedsheets. There is now blood on Guinevere's bedsheets. You can guess where this is heading. The next day, Meleagant comes in, even though Guinevere and Kay totally could have left by now, but they're still there for some ridiculous reason. Meleagant comes in, sees blood on the bedsheets. He says, Kay, you have done what I am supposed to do to the queen. What is this blood on her bedsheets? And Kay says, no, I don't know. I've been asleep this whole time. And she says, no, my nose was bleeding. It's from my nose. And the guy says, no, I don't believe it. Kay's wounds have opened in the night, so Kay must have been all over you in the bedsheets. So anyway, it becomes a huge thing. Meleagant says, I'm going to fight you, Kay. I'm going to kill you like I was going to do to Lancelot. And Kay says, I don't want to fight you. Guinevere somehow finds some servant and tells her to go fetch Lancelot because he's still around. The servant runs and gets Lancelot, and Meleagant's about to kill Kay. And Lancelot steps in and goes, you can't kill Kay. He's a friend of mine, and you definitely can't kill me because I'm Lancelot. Hooray, he finally says his own name. Meleagant sees Lancelot, and they fight it out. Once again, Lancelot kicks Meleagant's butt. The king comes in and sees this and begs Lancelot to stop so that he doesn't kill his son. Lancelot will not stop. He tells Guinevere to tell Lancelot so that he'll actually do it. Guinevere says, please, Lancelot, please don't kill him. Lancelot goes, oh my god, of course, how could I ever think such a terrible thing? Of course I won't kill him. He stops. Meleagant stops fighting and says, don't forget our fight that's going to take place in a year at Camelot. And Lancelot goes, how could I forget? And so they part ways. Lancelot goes on his way to find Gawain. Guinevere still stays in the tower with Maligant and Kay for some unknown reason. I don't understand why. They could have just gone with him. Ay. Anyway, on a mission to find Gawain. On the way to find Gawain, Lancelot runs into a dwarf. Oh, by the way, his people are following him again. They won't separate. Lancelot and his posse, though they are so close to finding Gawain, instead, they come across another dwarf, another evil dwarf, I may remind you. Of course, because all short people are evil. So, they come across an evil dwarf who says, "Oh, Lancelot, you're the great Sir Lancelot, Knight of the Cart. I have someplace really important to take you." Lancelot goes, "Well, actually, I'm kind of busy. I'm trying to find my bud." And he goes, No. You have to come with me. I'm going to take you to this very special place." That's not suspicious at all. Lancelot says, "Oh, of course. How could a dwarf have anything but good intentions?" So he follows the dwarf somewhere that we don't know. The rest of Lancelot's squad is waiting out there for Lancelot to return. This whole group of people that have been following him around all day. They wait, and they wait, and they wait, and now it's nightfall, and he still hasn't come back, and now it's the next day, and he still hasn't come back. So they're like, "Well, we don't really know what to do. We should probably find Gawain, because he'll know what to do. We're near finding him now anyway, apparently, so let's go continue in the direction we were going, guys." So they continue. They find the underwater bridge that Gawain was supposed to have taken to find Guinevere. They come to the underwater bridge. Who else do they find but Sir Gawain? But he is in the water and struggling to swim because he's wearing super heavy armor and chainmail and can't stay above the water. And he's flailing around in the water, and a couple of the peasants go, "We'll save you, Sir Gawain," and they jump in the water and they rescue the knight. He sputters until he can speak a couple minutes later, and the first thing out of his mouth is, "What happened to the queen? Where's the queen?" They say, "Oh, it's all good. Lancelot already saved her." And he goes, "Oh, okay, where is she? Is she back in Camelot?" And they're like, "No, she's still with Maligant." And he's like, What? Why? And they say, "We don't know. She's still there, though. And Lancelot went on some quest with a dwarf who said that he was going to take Lancelot to some magical place." And Gawain goes, "Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well, it wasn't a magical place, wherever he was being taken. Because you can't trust dwarves, so we need to go find Lancelot. Because he has been tricked. We have all been tricked." So the group of people say, "Well, I think the best option is to go back to the king and tell him what happened so that we can send out an official search party for Lancelot." So they all go back to the king. Again, they're like, "We're back, we're trying to find Lancelot, he's been captured." Guinevere goes, "Oh no, my knight has been captured!" Now all of a sudden she cares about him. So they send out a search party. In the meantime, they receive a letter from somebody that says Lancelot has already arrived back in Camelot. Everything is fine, he just went with this dwarf to go see something, but everything's all good. He's already back in Camelot, you might as well send Guinevere and Gawain and Kay back to Camelot, and everyone can be reunited together, and all will be well. Everyone goes, "Oh, great! That's wonderful news! Let's all go back to Camelot!" No one is suspicious at all. So they go back to Camelot, and then they get there, and they see King Arthur, and they go, "Oh, Arthur! Hooray! It's so nice to see you! We've been gone for so long!" King Arthur is super excited to see his friends and his wife, and his wife has nothing to say about Sir Lancelot. I wonder why. And they get there, and he says, "Oh, cool, this is so great to have you guys back. Oh, this is fantastic. Where's Lancelot?" They say he was supposed to be back with you. Arthur goes, "No, I haven't seen Lancelot since he left here." They go, "Oh, great." And then they realize, once again, they have all been tricked. Those nasty dwarves, man, they'll trick you. So now they send out a search party for Lancelot. Everyone sends out a search party for Lancelot, including King Bad. And little does he know that Lancelot is imprisoned in his own castle. in the dungeon by Meligant, of course. The dwarf was working for Meligant, and now Lancelot is imprisoned in the bottommost cell of the dungeon. Meanwhile, back in Camelot, there's a tournament going on because they didn't expect Guinevere and Kay and Gawain to come back so soon. So in the meantime, since Arthur was getting kind of bummed out that his friends and his wife still hadn't returned, his people had set up a tournament to cheer Arthur up. But now everyone's back, just in time for the tournament that day. Perfect timing. Guinevere decides to go to the tournament because she thinks it'll cheer her up because her love, Lancelot, isn't there. So she goes to the tournament, word gets out to everyone that the Queen Guinevere is going to attend the tournament. She's back in Camelot, everything is fine, the people have been freed, the Queen has returned and is going to attend the tournament, and the word gets out all the way back to Lancelot, who is in the dungeon. I don't know how he could possibly get word back to a dungeon, but somehow he does. Also, he gets transferred from the dungeon to a manor. He's still imprisoned, but it's Meligant's wife who lives in this other manor nearby the castle. So he gets transferred to this other manor because Meligant's wife says, you know, I could take care of him. He'll still be imprisoned. I'll treat him like a terrible slave. But, you know, that way you can leave your dungeon open for even worse criminals. Meligant goes, that's fine. I'm gonna go take care of some business with the king, blah, blah, blah. I'll be back. The wife says, okay, that's fine. She takes Lancelot into the manor and apologizes for how terribly her husband has been treating him. Lancelot goes, it's fine. It's not your fault. However, I do ask this of you. There's a tournament at Camelot right now, and my queen is there. Arthur is there. Gawain is there. Kay is there. All my friends are there. And I would really, really like to go because the love of my life is there. And I'm not. And of course, the wife has such pity on him and feels so sympathetic towards him because, oh, love, how every woman can relate to love. And so she feels awful and decides to set him free if he will come back immediately after the tournament to her as prisoner and give her his love. And Lancelot says, I will give you my heart. I will give you anything that you wish, if you will let me see the love of my life one more time. And she says, okay, you're free, but I'm gonna trust your word that you're gonna come back to me immediately after it's done. And he says, yes, of course. So Lancelot goes to the tournament. He's free, he goes to Camelot. The tournament has begun. He's a little bit late, but he comes into the battlefield just in time, of course, very conveniently, just in time for the last knight to do a joust. So the king says, oh, there's one more knight who would like to participate in the tournament. Let us see this knight. Lancelot comes out onto the field. Guinevere recognizes his armor and says, I wonder if it's him. I know other knights have similar armor, so I don't want to make the assumption, but I definitely want to know if that's him. So she sends her servant down to the knight, the mysterious new knight who has just appeared. And before he can start his joust, the servant says to him the message that Guinevere told her to relay to him. And that message is to do your worst. Lancelot goes, what? I'm sorry? The servant says, Queen Guinevere says to do your worst. I don't know, that's what she told me to tell you. Lancelot lowers his visor and says, I will do whatever she commands me to do. And so Lancelot does his worst. The guy coming towards him, his opponent, kicks Lancelot's butt and whoops him off his horse, and Lancelot lands hard on the ground, and everyone goes, oh my god, who is this guy? He's so awful. What a terrible fighter. Lancelot takes it all in and just says nothing about it because he will do whatever the queen commands. The queen smiles because she knows that this is in fact her Lancelot. Day 2 of the tournament happens. Guinevere does the same thing to Lancelot. She tells him through her servant to do his worst, just to make sure that it is in fact him, and to make sure that he doesn't let up on his promise to do his worst. Guys, another promise. How many promises has Lancelot made in this story? I don't know. A deal, a promise, there's so many. So, Guinevere tells him to do his worst again. Once again, Lancelot does his worst. Now, on the third day, he shows up again. Everyone goes, "Oh my god, what is this guy doing back here again? How can you possibly show your face?" They say this to his face. "How dare you show your face after doing so terribly the past 2 days? You're gonna come here again? You're just gonna lose to all of us, to even the worst fighters here." Ha 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 ha, they're all laughing amongst each other. Lancelot lowers his visor. He's prepared to do his worst again. But Guinevere sends her servant down to him and tells her to relay one last message. The servant goes up to Lancelot and says, "Sir, my lady commands that you do your best." Lancelot smiles. And he lowers his visor and he races towards his opponent and he, in one fell swoop, knocks his opponent off his horse to the ground and probably breaks a bunch of bones. Everyone in the audience goes, "What the hell? What just happened?" Everyone cheers and Lancelot gets to do it another time with another opponent and he kicks that opponent's butt. And for the rest of the day, Lancelot nails everybody. And everyone's cheering and they think he's wonderful and they say, "Oh, we were mistaken. He is a great fighter. He's really good. Just kidding. We take back everything we said about him." And at the end of the day, everyone wants to talk to this knight. He's literally become a huge celebrity within that day. And everyone wants to know who he is. Who is your identity? Once again, everyone wants to know who Lancelot's identity is. But the knight has already gone. Lancelot has kept his word once again and is already on his way back to Maleganth's wife to be her lover. So he gets back to the manor, and when he gets there, guess who's waiting there for him? Maleganth has found out what his wife is up to, and so he builds a prison specially for Lancelot, and it's on an island, on an inlet, in the middle of nowhere, off the coast of Gore, which is in the middle of nowhere. There is a tiny, tiny little island with nothing surrounding it but sea. Kind of like that island in Harry Potter where they go in the first one where they escape mail that's coming in from Hogwarts to invite Harry to wizard school. So there's this island, and Maleganth has, within 2 months, a giant tower constructed just for Lancelot, made of stone, with one singular little tiny half of a window at the top to lower food into every day. Small little unhealthy portions of food each day for Lancelot to eat. And that is where Lancelot stays. So, instead of Guinevere being the damsel in distress locked in a tower, it is now the great and mighty Sir Lancelot who is locked in a tower. And he stays there for a couple weeks. Then a couple more weeks pass. And Lancelot is still optimistic. He's gonna get out of here. "I'm Lancelot," he keeps saying. And he tries to find a way out. Then a month passes. Then another month passes. Now he's growing slightly desperate. He's still optimistic. He's gonna find a way out of here because he's Lancelot and he's trying to dig. And his fingers only end up really bloody. And he gets nowhere with it. So then he tries climbing to the top of the tower. He uses the rope that they lowered, that they lower each day for food. And one day the guy leaves the rope there. And Lancelot uses the rope to climb up to the top window of the tower. Tries to climb out of the window, but it's far too small. He cannot fit, gets stuck in the window. Calls for help for anyone to hear him. But there is no one around and nothing around but ocean and the sound of waves crashing on the shore of his little island, drowning out the sound of his voice in the wind. Lancelot is entirely alone. He falls back to the ground in his tower and probably breaks like 5 bones because it's a really tall tower. Anyway, months pass, and more months pass, and more months pass, and he ends up being there for a year. 1 year exactly. Now that this year has passed, a girl randomly comes around on her horse looking for Lancelot. Who is this lady? We don't know. Clutchian didn't tell us. She's riding around on her horse. She comes across this tower. She thinks that might be where Sir Lancelot is. Literally no one has seen this tower in the whole year that it's been constructed. But she has randomly spotted this island in the middle of nowhere, found some boat, I guess, and rowed out to the island, rowed herself out to the island. Climbs up onto the shore, and before she can call out to the tower, she already hears a man inside going on this huge monologue once again that's like 2 pages long about how he wishes death could come take him already. He has grown very bitter, Lancelot, and is cursing Gawain for not coming to rescue him yet. What kind of a friend is he? And he goes on this monologue saying that the peasants were right about how it's so hard to come by a good friend anymore. Gawain has left him. Guinevere has forsaken him. Arthur has forsaken him. No one will come find him or help him. He's left alone forever. And how has death not taken him yet? Blah, 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 etc., etc. The girl hears this and knows that it's Sir Lancelot, because who else could possibly be going on this monologue right now? So she calls out to him, Sir Lancelot! Lancelot goes even more crazy because he thinks he's hearing voices now. Oh, death, now I'm hearing voices. Why won't you take me already? And she calls out again, Lancelot, you're not mad, it's me. Well, I shouldn't say me because you don't know who I am, but it is I, some lady who has come to rescue you. Lancelot goes, what? Who? And she says, I'm Meleagant's sister. You didn't really know he had a sister, but that's me. I'm Meleagant's sister, and I kind of hate my brother, like, a lot. So I'm here to come rescue you. How do I get you out of here? And Lancelot has no idea, and so he says, I guess you're gonna have to, like, break the window open more. And she says, oh, great, because I have a pickaxe. Very conveniently. So she climbs up to the tower. I don't know how she does this. She climbs up to the tower somehow. Maybe she found some rope. She has stolen a pickaxe from her brother Meleagant, climbs to the top of the tower, breaks the window open further with pickaxe so that it's large enough for Lancelot to crawl through. He crawls through the window and climbs back down the rope, and Lancelot is free! He falls to the sand, and he feels the earth on his hands and knees once again, and he falls to the lady's feet, and he says, my lady, I am yours. You are my savior. You have no idea what I have been through, and you have rescued me. And so now, literally anything that is mine is yours to have. You can have my body, you can have my heart, you can have my soul, you can have my land, my money. Anything that you want from me is yours. And she says, no, that's fine, buddy. I'm just keeping my word. He goes, what? Have we met before? She says, come on, Lance, don't you recognize me? I'm the girl who wanted the head of the guy that you beheaded that one time. You guys remember when Lancelot beheaded that guy and the girl says, I need the head of that guy. And so this is her. She has come back and she said, if you give me the head of that guy that you're about to kill, I will come and help you when you most need it, I promise. And Lancelot made that deal. And she kept her promise. So here she is, returning her promise, and has now rescued Lancelot. So, she's like, I don't need anything from you. You don't need to be my husband or whatever. You can go on back to Camelot and to your Guinevere or whatever. I'm just keeping my word to you. You're free. Bye. Have a good one. And she gives him her horse, another extra horse that she happens to have, and off he goes back to Camelot. Now, we're going to backtrack real quick for a quick second. While Lancelot had been in the tower, Meleagant, a year ago, right as soon as Lancelot was already imprisoned, Meleagant made his way to Camelot by himself and said, I am here, I am ready to fight Lancelot. And everyone looked at him and said, what? And he said, what? I made a deal with Lancelot that a year ago that we would meet a year later on that day, which is today, and we were going to meet at Camelot and we were going to fight. That was the deal we made. And if I won, I would get to take Guinevere back with me as my prisoner and my queen. Now, where is Sir Lancelot? And of course, Meligant knew full well that Lancelot had just been imprisoned in his own tower. And of course, everyone at King Arthur's court goes, "We have no idea what you're talking about. None of us have seen Lancelot. We have no idea where he is. We've sent out search parties all year. None of us have seen him." Meligant goes, "Oh, how dishonorable for Lancelot not to have shown up at his own fight that we agreed to have. I'm going to come back in a year from today, and I will fight Sir Lancelot, and if he's not here, I will proclaim myself as the winner and take Guinevere with me as my prisoner and queen once again, and you will not fight me on it." And Arthur goes, "I mean, good luck with that, but okay, fine, whatever you say." And Meligant goes back to his father, to King Bad, and says, "Father, I just went to Camelot to fight Lancelot like I said I would a year ago, and Lancelot wasn't there. How dishonorable. Now, doesn't that make me such a good man? Aren't I such a man of honor to have shown up at this fight that I said we were going to have a year ago? And Lancelot, it makes Lancelot such a dishonorable man. Aren't I so good, Father? Aren't you proud of me?" And we realize now how desperately Meligant is in need of approval from his father, just as the other knight from earlier, who is also in desperate need from his father in that picnic area. Anyway, now a year has passed. Lancelot, in the meantime, has been freed. Lancelot is on his way to Camelot. And of course, so very conveniently, Lancelot finally arrives back in Camelot on the very day that Meligant said he would return to fight him. How perfect is this timing? So, Meligant storms into Camelot. He says, "I'm ready to fight Lancelot now!" Gawain is standing there, getting all of his armor on. Meligant goes, "What is this?" Gawain says, "Well, buddy, Lancelot's not here, so you're gonna have to fight me instead." And Meligant says, "I said I would fight Sir Lancelot." And he says, "Well, he's not here, friend, look around, so it's gonna have to be me." And Meligant agrees and says that it might as well be Arthur's other best knight. If it's not going to be Sir Lancelot, it might as well be Gawain. So he decides to fight Gawain. Gawain has this super extra... Gawain gets real extra for a second, guys. He has this whole carpet set out for him while the servants put all his armor on. Like, it's a little weird. It's very unlike Gawain to have this whole, like, super decadent preparation process. But anyway, he has a carpet set out for him, and he has all these squires putting on his armor, and it's beautiful armor, and Chrétien gives a whole description of the armor, of course. You can see where Tolkien probably got his stylistic choices from when it comes to descriptions. Anyway, Gawain is all suited up, he's finally ready to fight, he's all ready, he's mentally prepared, Meligant is mentally prepared, he's ready, everything's about to take place, and suddenly, boom, the doors burst open, and in walks none other than Sir Lancelot. And he walks in and says, "Meligant, this challenge is mine. I have returned to Camelot, and I will take you down." Meligant goes, Gawain sees him and says, "Oh, my buddy, where have you been?" Arthur goes, "Oh, my friend, Lancelot." Guinevere sees him and runs to him, saying nothing, and showers him with kisses and says, "My love, my love," and kisses him all over, right in front of her husband, King Arthur, who simply watches and says nothing, of course. Y'all, I feel so bad for Arthur. So many times that Guinevere does this, because she does it quite often. This guy's been through some stuff. Anyway, everyone thinks it's so romantic, except for Gawain and Arthur, who are like, "What's happening?" Anyway, wonderful reunion, yay! Meligant says, "All right, enough, it's time to fight." And Lancelot says, "Buddy, let's go. You have imprisoned me for a year, and you have no idea what it did to my mind, and you have no idea how ready I am to take your life." And that's exactly what he does. Da-da-da! Chrétien describes a wonderful fight and a wonderful defeat that Lancelot gives to the terrible Sir Meligant. And Chrétien gives several more descriptions about how awful a person Meligant is, as if we don't already know. And the fight ends, and everyone cheers, And Guinevere rushes to her love and gives him more kisses right in front of her husband that she's currently cheating on. And it's a wonderful ending to the story, and everyone celebrates, and Gawain gives him a pat on the back, and they all escort Lancelot back into the main keep of the castle. And that is the end of the story of the Knight of the Cart. The end! Guys, that's such a long story, and it goes on forever. I'm so sorry, but thank you for listening. It's been 2 hours! But now you guys know the story of the Knight of the Cart. So, let's go back for a second and look at some of this. So, we'll discuss more of this later once I've done the other episodes about Yvain and Eric and Cleagia. But just to kind of go over and recap some things real quick. Just to discuss them. So, all the deals that were going on were a little confusing. There's so many so many deals and so many promises that happened throughout this story. But I think we can connect the main one, because in the very, very beginning of the story, the very beginning, when the knight comes in and ruins everybody's feast and says, King Arthur, I have lords and ladies of yours that are in captive and there's nothing you can do about it. No one will free them. That whole deal in the beginning, maybe that wasn't some random deal that enables Guinevere to be captured in the forest. Maybe that was the lords and ladies that knight was talking about to Arthur. Maybe those lords and ladies were the lords and ladies of Logris. So all the people that were being held captive in Meliganth's land, maybe those were Arthur's people. And this knight was simply trying to help Arthur out. So maybe that deal in the beginning of the story isn't actually some random deal that has nothing to do with the rest of the tale. Maybe Lancelot really did fulfill the deed from the very beginning of the story. It makes sense. Clutchen never goes back and makes those connections for us, but we can kind of make them for ourselves, right? Cool. The girl who rescues Lancelot from the tower, who says she was Meliganth's sister, Lancelot also recognizes as the girl who wanted the head of the guy that Lancelot had to behead, right? Now, what about that other girl from earlier in the story? The girl at the ford. Remember when Lancelot was crossing the ford and he was super in a daze about Guinevere, and the ford knight who was guarding the ford said, you can't cross here unless you defeat me, and Lancelot was about to defeat him, and then a random girl from out of nowhere comes in and says, please don't kill him, I beg you to spare his life, if you spare his life, I will help you when you're most in need, and I will return the favor. And Lancelot says, fine, it's a deal. But we never see that girl again. What if that girl is the same girl who appears again later in the story and says, please, if you kill this knight, give me his head? I think it's the same girl, because Clutchen later describes Meliganth as having several siblings, so it would only make sense that Meliganth would also have a brother just as stupid and terrible as he is to guard a ford. Like, have you nothing better to do with your life than to guard a ford? Like, who pays him? Like, that's really a job? People were paid to guard fords and rivers and stuff so that no one could cross it unless you're defeated? Why? What's the point? Like, why don't you at least make them pay a toll? Like, why do they have to defeat you? It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, it would make sense if Meliganth's brother had that position for a job. So, it would make sense if Meliganth's sister, whom it says the Ford Knight's sister was the one who defended him, it would make sense if that girl was the same girl who yet again was the same girl who rescued Lancelot. So it's the same girl in all of these instances throughout the whole story, and Lancelot just doesn't recognize her, because he has gone through quite a bit in the story, and he does all of these different things and goes through all of these different lands. So he's seen a lot of girls, especially all the ones that try to throw themselves at him when he kind of becomes a celebrity, right? So it's hard to keep track of them all. So this girl reappears throughout the whole story. The only girl who is kind of extra thrown in there, who has nothing to do with this other girl, Meliganth's sister, is the one in that manor who wanted Lancelot to sleep with her, right? She kind of was there for no reason. But she did help direct Lancelot in the right direction to the sword bridge. So she wasn't totally useless. Anyway, she also taught Lancelot about hesitation. And Lancelot hesitated for a couple seconds before rescuing her, quote-unquote rescuing her, from those guys who were, you know, so we're supposed to think, raping her, right? But of course, they ended up being part of her household, and they weren't actually raping her. She had set up the whole thing to see if Lancelot would hesitate before rescuing her, just as he hesitated a couple seconds before getting into the cart to rescue Guinevere. So, there's a reoccurrence of themes here. There's a reoccurrence of hesitation and what it means to be honorable and fearless and courageous when it comes to completing your quest. And that's what Lancelot was eventually known to be. Completely, 100% fearless and just completely on it when it comes to doing something that everyone else is afraid to do. He would take the challenge, no matter what. And that's, I think, the important core of the story, what it means to be honorable and courageous. So, that's what we have to learn from Lancelot, and what we have to learn from Kletchen and his story of the Knight of the Cart. Yay! Now we can do those other episodes. I'm gonna do the next one about Sir Ivaine, and the one after that will be a combination of Sir Eric and Kleja, and possibly Percival, because the three of those are shorter stories. I think I can fit them all into one episode instead of doing a 2-hour-long episode like I just did with this one. Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. If you have any questions or feedback or anything, please let me know. Message me on the Facebook page or comment on the Podomatic.com site. If you have any suggestions for any upcoming episodes besides the Kletchen ones that we're going to continue in the next ones, but if you have any other topics that you'd like to discuss or like to hear me discuss with you guys, please feel free to let me know. Let me know what you want to talk about or what you want to hear about regarding Arthurian legend or literature or movies or whatever you're interested in. I want to hear what you guys are interested in and what you'd like to talk about. So by all means, give me any feedback or topics or anything you'd like to talk about. Also, before we say goodbye, if you've made it this far, I made a YouTube video in case you'd like a laugh or something to laugh at for a little bit. I made a YouTube video with Arthurian legend as vines. So I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you guys, everyone knows what vines are, but if you've seen those videos on YouTube that are like Star Wars as vines or Marvel videos as vines or Harry Potter as vines, where they're like iconic vines that used to be really famous that people have put captions over of Marvel characters or Harry Potter characters or Star Wars characters or whatever, it's just literally just some stupid thing that I did for fun. But anyway, it's a fun thing to check out. So go ahead and search Arthurian legend as vines, and it'll be the first video that pops up. In case you want something really stupid and mindless that's still Arthurian related to watch, go ahead and check it out. Anyway, thank you guys so much for joining us. We'll talk so much more about this in the coming episodes about Kletchen and his work and his Arthurian romances. And I hope to see you next time. Please join us for the upcoming episodes. Thank you once again for joining me. And until then, my lords and ladies, stay courageous and fare thee well.